There are so many options out there. You've just got to focus on what works and what you can do. Think about the customer touch points and think about consistency and cohesion on those. Collaborate with yourself. Make everything cohesive.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. In this episode, we're catching up with one of our past guests. We'll have quite a few of these episodes coming up over the next couple of months as a little continuation of our 10-year anniversary celebrations. We haven't managed to do quite as much on the 10-year celebration front as we wanted, as I have lost a few months of my year to perimenopause symptoms. Not going to go into that right here, right now. If you want the blow by blow, it's in my LinkedIn post and LinkedIn newsletter. But we have managed to do what we planned with the past guest catch-ups, and we booked quite a lot of those in to record. So we'll be dripping those out to you over the next couple of months. And we've selected them as guests who we thought brought an awful lot to their episodes last time. Some of them are from way back in the early days of the podcast, some of them a bit more recently, and who we believe will have plenty to bring you again this time. And I'm really pleased we managed to pull off this part of the 10-year celebrations, because I think it's probably the idea we had that will make the most impact on you, our listeners. And that is obviously the point of all of this, is to help you with your businesses. So I'm all right with the fact that we've had to jettison some of the other ideas, because we've managed to deliver on the one that really is going to deliver. Right, back to what we're talking about today. Back on the show for the first time in 4 years is the always insightful Julie Macken from Neves Bees. She'll be catching us up on what they've been up to over the last 4 years, sharing insights into a pretty strategy-shaking insight they gathered, some cool marketing tips, and she will also be sharing what's got her most excited about 2026, which if she pulls it off, is going to be phenomenal. And make sure you listen to the end, because she's also sharing some really insightful top tips in that final section as well. And now to introduce our special guest. Julie Macken is the Deputy Queen Bee of Neves Bees, a family business turning the produce of their beehives and those of local beekeepers into products that are now certified 100% natural. Founded in 2017, they switched focus to e-commerce in 2021, and they now sell via their WooCommerce store, wholesale, and a couple of events here and there. And they've now reached £100,000 a year in sales and have just sold their 80,000th product. Hello, Julie.
Hi, Chloe.
Lovely to have you back on the show. How have the last 4 years been?
Well, it's quite interesting. I was saying this to you earlier. I listened back to the podcast that we did with you 4 years ago, and it was really interesting to hear what has changed since then, and what changed quite significantly, I should say, and what has stayed the same. And part of the change is the change to our business and what we've done. But then part of the change that you don't notice as it's happening, it's like an evolution, is what has happened in the world of e-commerce and the world of digital marketing in general. And it was really interesting listening back. Some of the things that I was saying was like, oh my God, this is an amazing thing that we're doing. And I'm like, God, that's so routine. And, you know, ditto some of the things now that I'm using that I just think that I've been using forever. I clearly hadn't even, we weren't even using them then. So that's been quite different. I think one of the changes that we've made as a business is we've worked out that we've almost got two businesses here. So we're selling skincare and gifts. And I remember going into a new retailer that we just listed in about a couple of years ago. And she was saying, well, do you want to be on the skincare shelf or the other shelf? And I'm like, what do you mean? And she said, well, skincare is your face. I'm like, well, I've got skin all over my body. She said, no, but skincare is your face. I thought this was absolutely bonkers. But anyway, we went with it, and golly, was she right? So the way that the consumers see the market is that skincare is something you put on your face, and then other products are things that you put elsewhere. Who knew? So it became very clear once we started to sort of analyze this a bit more that we have a range of products that sells at face-to-face events, i.e. pop-up shops, and through retail. And these are things like our gifting products. We have lip balms and hand salves and little gift sets, little nail and cuticle product. And they're all kind of 20 quid and less products. But then we have the inverted commas. No, I'm not even putting it inverted commas, proper skincare products. I think the others are proper as well. But and they sell online. And I did some analysis a while ago, and 70% of our online sales are our facial skincare products. 90% of our retail and pop-up shop sales are gifting products. So we've basically got two different businesses.
That's such a dramatic split. I mean, I get, you know, you go into the retail store and you're talking to the retailer and you get clarity on the different areas your product could sit in. But then to see it that stark in your face-to-face and your online,
yep,
like a totally different merchandising strategy for the two different scenarios.
Totally different merchandising strategy and totally different communication strategy, you know, totally different. And I was chatting to Neve, who's my daughter of Neve's Bees, who is now 23, 9 when
Crikey.
She had this great idea, I know. And she's a very savvy young woman. And she was like, well, duh, that's obvious. I'm like, go on, you're going to have to explain that one to me. And she said, well, because there are certain products that people want to read about, take the time reading about, and those are e-commerce products. So of course people are going to want to buy their facial skincare online when they're happy to buy gifts and stuff in a shop, because you want to read about it, you want to find out about it. So that was a real revolution to me. So I think one of the big changes we've made as a business is that we are now competing. We have an e-commerce shop that sells in the £3 billion skincare market. We're no longer in the sort of, I think it's something like 50 million is the lip balm and gifting lip balm market. You know, suddenly we're into, this is the UK only, the £3 billion skincare market. So the nuances in branding are much more significant. The cleverness and the budgets of the competitors are much more highly tuned, much more fine-tuned, and there's a lot of nonsense. I'm a scientist. I'm a chemist by training. There's a lot of utter, if I'm not allowed to swear out, nonsense.
No, best not to swear.
I'm going to say nonsense. There's a lot of utter nonsense that is spouted in this market. So it's quite interesting to take the high ground and actually just be truthful. Yeah, just say actually what these products do and what they don't do. So we've... yeah, so that's been quite a transition, and it's starting to work. We have some quite nice strategies that I'll explain later, because I think that might be of interest to some of your listeners. But yeah, that's been quite a change for us.
So have you got to a point where you've worked out that a customer at an event or a customer in retail will buy the gift products and then come and explore the more complicated products later? Is there that kind of like funnel stage?
Yeah,
that they'll buy the lip balm so they remember who you are, and then they'll come and look at the stuff they had a look at on the table but they weren't ready to buy.
Well, that's a really interesting question, and to some degree that works. Now we're aware of it. We are really, really careful now about where we sell our products. Mm-hmm. Because if you're selling a product that actually is competing with, you know, the likes of Augustus Bader, who's literally £400 for 100 grams, very happy to share the ingredients and how people are getting ripped off with that one. And then you're also selling in a gift shop. You've got, you know, you can only sell in certain gift shops, and you can't go to, you know, Mrs. Miggins' tea shop, because that's not going to be the brand placement is really, really important. Product price promotion, right? You know, you start realizing how important the place is in the delightful four P's of marketing. So that's been quite an interesting one. But we've got now, being aware of that sort of funnel, if you like, there's some very obvious things that you can do, such as we obviously give out discount cards when we meet people and they buy something from a festival or a pop-up shop from us. And we're literally just going back to making some paper leaflets. Get this, I am buying, just about to commission some A4 threefold paper leaflets. I've done those for like 30 years. But it's just a really nice way of physically giving something to somebody. If they don't want to buy or they're just inquiring, you can physically give them. We've given them QR codes they don't click through, giving them a leaflet with why we're different. Here's a QR code that you can click through if you want to, and here's a discount code. So, you know, just being a lot more savvy about actually getting people through, but trying to explain why our products are different, which is quite an interesting one.
You mentioned on the wholesale front that you're being careful with placement of the skincare range. Are you still letting anybody have the gift products?
No, we're not.
Wow.
No, we don't know. And that's partly, and again, I was listening about this. So this happened a while ago now. So I mentioned this at the last podcast that we did. We sold something on a wholesale site that then went to a retailer. And we found it on some really dodgy eBay shop with rubbishy pictures. And they were selling it at like 50p more than the wholesale price that we'd sold it to them. So there's no way they were making anything out of it. But obviously, you know, we give them a decent margin. So that was part of it. But then we realized that, you know, in some settings. So I got a comment. Somebody came up to us, sort of pop up. It was quite a smart pop up. And she's like, oh, I saw this stuff. She said, I just nipped into a little gift shop because I had to go and buy the parking, and it was free if I bought something from gift shop. So it was just a little trinket, really. I picked it up and my God, it was amazing. I'm going to buy some more. But she'd bought it because it was a cheap little trinket that was going to pay for the car parking for her. I was like, no, that's not what we're trying to do here. Worked out all right because it was really good. And when she saw it, she bought it again, and then she upsold, you know, she bought some more expensive stuff as well. But, you know, that's not the brand image that we want, really. It's an interesting one. It's a challenging one.
So would you get to a point, playing site devil's advocate here, where on the website you would remove the gifting items from the site? Or do you think you'll keep all products in all channels, but with different strategy and different channels?
I'd love to say we have enough profit to be able to just say we're not going to sell all the products to all the people. But we don't have that luxury. However, what we have done, and again, this is one of the significant things we have done, is we've completely redid the website. Again, we'd just done it when I spoke to you 4 years ago, and we're just finishing off doing it again now. And one of the things that we've done is it's a skincare website. There is a section that you don't see immediately on gifts. And we obviously have the skincare gifts as well, because people buy self gifts and, you know, more luxurious gifts for people as well. And then we have a section for sort of stocking filler gifts, which is the, you know, where we have the sort of smaller products. So the emphasis on the website is most definitely skincare products rather than the sort of smaller gifty products.
Which I suppose is an easy thing to do. Now you understand what the customer journey is and how they're buying the product and how they're researching the product and who's buying the product as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, so we've done this for, yeah, as you say, 8 years now. And it's really interesting. I'd recommend to anyone that's been in business a while, just go back and look at some old plans that you did for the year, or some, I don't know, podcasts that you did, for instance, or something like that, and just go and see where you were. And it's a real insight to see how far you've got, and then challenge yourself, what could I change now? What do I still need to challenge myself on? You know, where could our strategy carry on evolving or revolving?
You mentioned as well that you're about to launch a new site. Are you sticking with WooCommerce, or have you shifted platform in that?
Yeah, we are sticking with WooCommerce. And in fact, we have just launched a new site. And it was not a let's build a new one and stop and change. It was a let's build it as we go along. So it was a refresh, quite a significant refresh. We are with WooCommerce. I'm not sure whether I would still be with WooCommerce if I was to start again. Our web chap was really into WooCommerce, and actually he does say it's more secure and it's built for a bigger business. That's his view. I think for the scale we're at the moment, and if I was going to start, or if I was going to be a small business, Shopify does seem to have the better integrations with other sort of affiliate programs. And that's just my observation. You know, whenever we're taken on by a new affiliate, they're like, oh, we can do a Shopify integration really easily. And I'm like, oh, we're WooCommerce. Oh, well, that's a bit more manual. Our web guy still reckons that it's better for scaling and bigger businesses, but I'm just taking his word on that.
And I suppose there is that re-platform can be a massive distraction. It's a huge pile of work. So that doesn't just end when it goes live, because everything has to be relearned, everything has to be reintegrated, all the rest of it. So to be able to do it little by little on the same platform as you're on without it being a massive project when it's, I mean, I assume the business is still something you're all doing as a bit of a side project.
Well, yes and no, actually. So I would say, so my husband and I now both run it. We have four contractors. We're both taking salaries out of it. We don't have any other work outside of this. The kids have left home. We don't have a mortgage. So the income we need is a bit less. But yeah, no, we're definitely taking salary out of it. It's no longer just a hobby. In fact, he had a real rant at me this morning because I was saving some old essentials because I like to play with them. And he was like, you can't. This is like they're out of date. They might get muddled up in the needs be stock. I'm like, I just want to play with them. You're not allowed to. So no, it's a proper business. It's definitely a proper business now, which it perhaps wasn't before. And again, I think that's a bit of an evolution.
Have you found you think about it differently now it's your main focus?
Possibly, although I was always a bit obsessed with it before. But I think one thing that does sharpen the brain a bit is, you know, we have four other mouths to feed. So, you know, we've got to get the income coming in every month. And, you know, sometimes you find yourself doing some slightly more tactical things to get, like yesterday, I just put three mailers together because we need to get some more mailers out, and I haven't done any for 2 weeks. And the lady that normally does them is off poorly for the moment. So, you know, and then a few weeks ago, we had a whole ton of honey. We don't normally sell honey, but I thought, you know what? We need, you know, a few hundred quid to pay the bills here. I'll stick a blog up on honey, and we sold a few hundred quid worth of honey. So, you know, little things like that, you find yourself doing a bit more perhaps, but,
And what are your contractors doing? What is it you've chosen to outsource?
So, and again, I'm glad you asked about that, because I think this is a really, really important thing. And again, I was listening back to what I said before. And one of the things I said is, if you think it's expensive to get a professional to do something, try getting an amateur to do it. And I, oh my God, I so wholeheartedly believe that. So I'm quite a good marketeer, but I'm a sort of top level. That sounds like I'm being big-headed. I'm a strategic marketeer. I think the plans and the big pictures. I'm really not good at the tactical stuff. I get bored. Mm-hmm. And I'm a pretty good chemist and formulator. My husband was an ops director, so he is very good on factory things, and he's made it a much bigger factory than it really is, a little factory. And he's really good at regulatory. So we keep that in-house, but then all the other stuff, we outsource. So we have a chap that does all the website stuff. Then we have a separate an IT people that just do the security and backup. We have a graphic designer, and she's been with us from day one. You know, we used to pay each other in terms of I did some marketing for her and she did the graphic design for us. And then we have we've just taken on a PR lady who does things like journal requests, and she writes the blogs and she does mailers for us and that kind of stuff. So, and we, you know, we need that. And she's so much better and so much quicker than me. You know, there's an overlap there, but she's much better at the tactical stuff and she just does it brilliantly. So, yeah.
PR is such a different skill set. Yes. Such a different skill set.
Yes, for sure.
Not one I have any skill at all. So last time we caught up in that previous episode, you said you never wanted to grow the business above $250,000. You're halfway there at the moment. With some pretty major strategic shifts since we last caught up.
Yeah.
Are you now you have this different view on the business? Do you want to go massive, or is it still wanting to cap it at that level?
I don't think I want to run a business that's £1 million business. I just think it would be stressful. It would be lovely if something we've created, somebody else wanted to come along and do it, but that's really not what I'm driving to do. I think the difficulty is, though, so no, I have no ambitions to. I was saying this to you before we went on air, is that there's a competitor brand that many people will have heard of called Wild Deodorants, and we make a range of deodorants. And to be honest, their packaging is is that they have some nice sort of aluminium packaging, which has got pretty patterns on it. I would say our ingredients are better. I'm going to be biased, but I think they are. But it's a nice product. I'm not lying about it. And they've got very good distribution network. But they've just sold to Unilever for 252 million quid. Now, if Unilever came knocking on my door and said, I'm going to give you 252 million quid, Julie, I'd go, oh, let me think about that. I think most people would probably take them up on it. Now, that's not likely to happen because we haven't built the business to be at that level. But I don't want the stress of running that bigger business. That said, we are still having fun with it. And to be honest, we've built the business. All the infrastructure is there such that if suddenly things did take off, then it could be that sort of scale of business. It could certainly scale up to about £1 million. I'm not sure we're at the sort of several billion that I'm sure Unilever will make wild be. But yeah, so it's not what we've set out to do, but I suppose we've inadvertently set up some processes and practices that could make it be that sort of scale. Be careful what you wish for.
It is the case when you're making your own life easy with your systems and your processes, you're also building it for ready for growth at the same time. So
that's a good point, actually. Yeah, that's a really good point.
They do come hand in hand. So given you've now got the platform ready for doing whatever you want with the business in the next few years, what's got you excited looking into 2026?
So I should explain a little bit about our USP and our formulation. So the skincare industry in the UK alone is worth 3 billion quid. I think globally it's something like 40 billion. I mean, it's just bonkers, the size of the business. And up until about 100 years ago, all skincare was pure active ingredients, right? So things that would moisturize your skin, things that would help nourish your skin. Then about 100 years ago, the manufacturers worked out how to add water to skincare. Now, if you're in manufacturing and you work out how to add water to a process, you're onto a winner. Because water is about half a p a litre and some of the oils we use are about up to £100 a litre. So that's quite a good margin reduction or margin increase. Problem was, once you add water to skincare, you have to add quite a lot of processing chemicals. And these processing chemicals are not good for your skin. Some are borderline neutral. Some are really quite damaging for your skin. And they're only added because of the water. And there's a lot of more science behind it, but that's the bottom line of it. So from the outset, I've not wanted to put water in the products because I don't want to put the processing chemicals in. So we just use pure moisturizers and pure active ingredients. I hadn't appreciated when we set this up quite how big a issue this is. So you can go around Boots or Superdrug or, I don't know, Selfridges and Harrods and look at the products they have on their shelves, anything from a face cream to a body lotion to a hand cream to a foot lotion or what have you, 99.9% of the time, the first ingredient will be aqua, which is water. And we're not just talking about a little bit, we're talking about up to 90% water. And then all those other processing additives are just there for the water and they're not good for anybody. So I've become quite impassioned about this because I just think, A, people are being gaslighted, lied to, certainly had the wool pulled over their eyes. You know, when you see these products that say, oh, made with argan oil for shiny hair or made with oats for eczema skin, and you actually look at how much they've got in and it's a tiny fraction and the rest of the stuff in there is really not good. So I'm really on a mission to try to change this. And I sort of encapsulate it by saying, wouldn't it be great to do to the skincare industry what's been done to the ultra processed food industry? Because the chemicals that are being added are just the same sorts of chemicals, emulsifiers, preservatives, stabilizers, thickeners, all that kind of stuff. And they're not good for your skin. They're not good when they're being manufactured. There's an awful lot of emissions and energy being used in manufacturing them. They're not good when they get washed off your skin into the water courses. The packaging associated with making them and shipping them around, the packaging associated with the products that have got them in that are like four times the size they need to be. And it's just the whole thing is bonkers. So just on our fairly small scale, we worked out that last year alone, we've saved 78 kilos of processing chemicals getting washed into the rivers. Great, I'm happy with that. But imagine if, like, our sales were tenfold, or another business decided that they were going to change their formulations, or consumers suddenly went, hang on a minute, I'm going to start looking for stuff without water in it. How much reduction you could make in all these chemicals that are getting shipped into rivers, shipped around the world, and they're not doing anything except enabling the manufacturers to sell water, is the bottom line. So what does next year look like? I would love to be able to do something like this. And I would love that the Neves Bees becomes a bit of a vehicle for doing that. Realistically, we're too small to be able to do that by ourselves. So one of the things I'm really excited about is, and this could be a big, maybe not e-commerce, but certainly digital marketing initiative, is that I mentioned to a journalist who's quite a sort of investigative journalist that we wanted to do to the skincare industry what's been done to the ultra-processed food industry. She's like, oh my God, that's amazing. She said, I'd love to do that. So she put together some ideas and I was like, okay, this looks brilliant, but there's absolutely no way I can afford that. So she said, well, why don't we get other businesses together? So there's probably about, I don't know, five or six businesses in the UK who are doing similar sort of formulations to what we're doing. So water-free, chemical-free. And I'd always looked at them as competitors in the past. And then suddenly we're like, you know what? Let's collaborate. And I'm not talking about, you know, we're not talking about price fixing or anything like that. But we're just talking about what if we pooled our resources, pooled our social media, did some intra-company links on our websites, started to put press releases out from all of us, pooled the journalists that we know. And suddenly we could actually be able to make an impact to this massive, massive market that's owned by, you know, the big boys and the glossy magazines. So that is my kind of, that's my passion for next year. And obviously there's an upside from a sales point of view as well, because, you know, as well as actually starting to change the industry for environmental reasons, and I just don't think people should be told not to have wrinkles and not to put chemicals all over their skin. But also, you know, obviously there's a commercial upside for us and for the other businesses competing, well, collaborating as well. That's what's getting me really excited next year.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level over and above your mega PR campaign, which I wish you all the best with, because that sounds super exciting. So Julie, are you ready for the top tips?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Okay, and I'm going to give you kind of a similar answer to what I gave you last time, which is I did an MBA about 20 years ago and I have not read a business book since. I think it kind of put me off. I do read a lot of apothecary books and dermatology books, which I'm not going to start recommending to people. But my top tip, and this is something that I now do use, I'm probably so far behind the curve for the people listening to the program, but go onto ChatGPT or Google Notes or whatever AI platform you use and just say, please summarize book XYZ in 1,000 words so that I can get the gist of it. And then you can spend 10 minutes. So you could have a Friday and you could read 30 books and get the gist of them all with a little help of your friend ChatGPT. It's honestly, I know that AI is revolutionizing everything, but that's a real easy win for me.
I like that. I think that would massively reduce my book buying habit if I start doing that, because then I could work out, do I actually want to read this book or not from the actual summary. Love that one. Okay, traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
So, and again, I'm going to go really old school on this. The thing, and again, we talked about this beforehand, is that there are so many options out there. You've just got to focus on what works and what you can do. And it has to go back to old-fashioned mailers for me. Our audience tends to be slightly older. So, you know, they're more likely to read an email than read a Substack or, I don't know, look on YouTube for input or what have you. So, I'm going to say MailChimp. But my caveat is but actually integrated MailChimp, because I think one of the things that people forget is that it's so, so important. And this is going to sort of lead into my top tip as well. But it's so important that you're not, MailChimp isn't just in isolation. It's part of the journey, and it has to be part of the journey. And as well as thinking how has people got onto the mailing list and are they the right people, what can you do with them as a consequence of them reading that mailer? How can you get them to do something else or find you about more about you in another way or what have you? So I do think that it's got to be MailChimp, or other platforms are available. But think it through. Not, it's not just a one-off thing. It's the whole journey that they're on.
Lovely. Tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
So this is a way of working, and this has been a biggie for us this year, is think about the customer touch points and think about consistency and cohesion on those. So one of the things that we did is our website, I mentioned that we've updated it, tidied it up, made it look more polished and made it look more professional. But we also made it sort of have a feel, a colour feel. And the feel is dark green, because we got told by the Soil Association that we're so green, we're dark green. Just putting that out there. And we've made a point of now all our mailers have that colourway. Any physical collateral that we do has that way. We try and use the same kind of images, and we spent quite a lot of money last year getting some really good images that feel very on brand. Again, sell the brand, not sell the product. So now everything that we do, even like when we had a stall at Glastonbury and we have a stall at Winchester Christmas Market, and those even have the same colorways. We've painted the stall the same color, and we used leaflets and tags and price tags that are all the same color, so that everything, whether the consumer sees us online, whether they see us in reality, whether they pick up a leaflet, whether they have an email, whether they look on our socials, we try and make everything feel and look the same with the same messages, so that then I think you can be far more synergistic. So yeah, so my top tip is sort of collaborate with yourself, make everything cohesive.
I like that. Definitely counts. Okay, the carbon top tip. This is a new one since the last time you were on. So very interested to hear your answer on this one. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
So two things I'm going to say. Number one, our website chap, Roger, our ITB, he is a specialist in reducing website carbon footprint. I would be lying if I said everything that he does, but he does all sorts of exciting stuff. And you can find him online, Roger Knight. I think, Chloe, you've contacted with him. So he does all sorts of stuff that I wouldn't pretend to know. And for us, built into our products is that they have a fraction of the carbon footprint of our competitive products, of other products online. So both from a packaging, from a shipping, and from a manufacturing of all the other chemicals. So say that's like one thing for us. And we've won a number of green awards because of that, because of we're not, you know, putting the water and the chemicals and the extra packaging and blah, blah, blah. So sort of intrinsic within our business with that. But yeah, there's all sorts of things, that clever stuff that Roger does. Yeah, I'd say look on his website, and that's very clever what he does.
Love those tips too. Julie, thank you so much for being here. Now, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
Yeah, so website, nevesbees.co.uk, N-E-V-E-S, bees. Socials, at nevesbees. And we also have a TikTok account from last time. And no, I don't do fancy dances, but it does seem to get some traction.
And I believe you may have a discount for our listeners.
We do, in fact. So if you put Masterplan in on our website, you will get a 15% voucher across the whole piece, which actually, we're just about to set up a Christmas shop. So I think when this comes out, the Christmas shop should be live. So if you want to come and buy your Christmas gifts, then if you put Masterplan in, you will get 15% off.
Excellent timing. Get those orders in before the delivery deadlines. Julie, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been lovely to get to catch up with you again. And I am very excited to see what happens with your PR campaign next year.
Yeah, bring us back in 4 years' time and we'll see whether we've hit the big time or whether we're still just like, yay, this is fun.
We will do. Lovely to catch up with Julie again. For me, the two big takeaways from that were, first off, really understanding how the customer thinks about the product and how they buy it. So those numbers she shared about the percentage of customers in the real world, face-to-face via their wholesalers and via their own events, what the percentage of them that only buy the gifting products, and then online, the percentage of orders that are only the skincare products, and just think of themselves as a different type of business, clearly hugely influential in what their strategies will be going forward. So I think that's super fascinating, understanding, I'm trying to avoid using the phrase customer journey, but the customer experience, I suppose, of your products and how they think about it, a real demonstration of how powerful that can be. And then secondly, Julie's idea about the big old PR campaign and the collaborative nature of that. You know, like there's 6-7 companies in the UK all creating non-ultra processed skincare. Why don't they come together to create the PR campaign, the activity which gets them their idea, this awareness, more exposure that will therefore benefit them all? Because together they'll be able to achieve more than they can individually. And, you know, even if it's some of those simple things she was saying about swapping email messages and various things, doing that with your competitors or with brands on a similar mission to you can be hugely, hugely powerful. So loving that, and loads of other cool stuff in there from Julie too. You can get our notes on this episode and the full transcript and a whole load of other stuff by heading to the ecommercemasterplan.com website. You can also use the direct to episode short link to go straight to the right episode. That's ecmp.info/the number of this episode. And when you get to the website, you can add yourself to our email list. If you enjoyed hearing from Julie and you want to hear what our first chat was all about, because we did reference it quite a bit in there, that's episode 336. And I read the notes today and Julie listened to it today, and we can both tell you that like 90% of what's in there is still relevant and a good idea. So it's definitely worth a listen. And if you're on WooCommerce and want to hear more interviews with WooCommerce people, then ecmp.info/WooCommerce will take you to the page on the site where we've got all our WooCommerce episodes listed. Thank you for tuning in to this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. We bring you a new interview every week to help and inspire you to succeed and thrive with your business, including becoming more carbon neutral. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.